Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight podcast number 218, recording this on Thursday, 5th of July, 2012. I'm Steve Litchfield. Recording this a few days late, aren't we, at first guest, Mr. Rafe Blandford?
We are recording these a few days late, and I'm afraid it's entirely my fault, or rather, it's the tree's fault for taking out my phone line and therefore my broadband connection for the last few days. So for anyone who was expecting it a little earlier, I do apologise, but it's all now been fixed and I'm back connected and the shakes from internet withdrawal symptoms have stopped, I'm glad to say.
Indeed, indeed. Also with us, we have David Gilson.
Yes, I'm here. There's no dramatic happenings. It sounds like Brave Sound living in an action movie.
It happens to us all every now and then, guys, and then we have to rely totally on mobile connectivity, and then we really do live the life, don't we? Everything has to happen via GPRS, Edge, 3G or 3.5G. So we kind of get the feel of what a road warrior would have to go through. So it's all good stuff. I guess we should start with the Nokia 808. We do mention the last couple of shows, and yet again, the full UK retail unit is in our hands. I'm up to part 2C of my review, Rafe. That means four main review parts. Part 1 was looking at the hardware and physical capabilities of the 808 PureView. Part 2A looked at samples of the output, photo and video, and basically comments on the quality, I perceive. Part 2B, again, continuing with the camera theme, put it head-to-head with things like the N8 and N8, its predecessors in the Symbian world. And then in Part 2C, which went up as we record this morning, I looked at the reworked camera interface and also at like-for-like 8-megapixel stroke 9-megapixel images compared to the N8. So I think all the four parts have gone down fairly well. We're up to about 100 comments on most of them, Ray. Did you get a chance to read many of them in your offline state?
Yes, I've just been catching up this morning, actually, looking at all your images and how you've been cropping in to sort of show out that really you only see the detail when you look close in on a pixel-by-pixel basis. I mean, that's basically because the quality is such that you need to be looking relatively close in to be able to see the differences on a screen, and we've kind of commented on this before. You won't necessarily see it on a device if you hold up the screen side by side with something else, partly because of the resolution of the screen, and also the quality of the screen itself will have quite an impact when you're looking on something under 4 inches. If you print it out, you can actually tell the difference more easily, or as you've done in the review here, you know, cropped in on some of the detail. And it's really, for me, the thing that stands out, having looked at a lot of the sample images, it's still the reduction in noise and the extra detail that you get in the PureView photos. You know, that extra detail and also the lack of kind of digital noise really does make a real difference. And I think that's probably the standout result from all the PureView, you know, sample shots that I've seen.
Yeah, now, for the Facebook generation, people who just want to they're out and about, they see a car they like or an animal or whatever, they take a snap with their phone, whatever it might be, they upload it to Facebook. Facebook does its usual dastardly deeds of downsampling whatever you upload it to VGA, basically. And just about any phone in the world will cope with that. Where PureView stands out is when you, A, want to do something a lot more ambitious with it. People, for example, who used to buy the N8 would have the same ambitions. Or if it's in low light situations like a party or an event indoors where the big xenon flash means that your typical iPhone or Android phone photo would be completely blurred, and the nice xenon lit shot from the N8 or 808 would be nice and crisp. Those are really the two big use cases, I think, here, Rafe.
Yes, no, I think that's right. And it's actually, you know, for someone who's thinking about buying this device, it's worth bearing in mind, you know, what are you planning to do with your photos afterwards? Because in one sense, yeah, I can see a lot of people buying it because it's the best camera. Just make sure you really do need it in one sense. I mean, of course, I understand the desire to kind of own the best mobile camera or camera phone on the market. But if you're not going to kind of make the most of the images when they come out, you'll probably be perfectly happy, you know, with something of maybe slightly lower quality, you know, be that an existing N8 or, you know, another product out there that's got a different camera module and sort of accompanying software. You can always make yourself feel better about it by, you know, sticking an extra one in front of the megapixel count and just pretending it's high resolution. But ultimately, yes, of course, I get that for most people, knowing that you've got that extra ability really does make a difference. And I will say the other thing about it is I would say it's far more forgiving when taking photos in kind of what would have previously been moderate conditions. it's easier to capture a better image. And that's essentially, you know, you've got more pixels, you've got more sensor to play with. And so you don't have to think quite so much sometimes about lighting or something like that. And particularly, I would say, you know, based on my experience, which isn't as extensive as Steve, but maybe he'll be able to back me up here, when you've got kind of great variation in light, and you quite often get this during the summer where you're in the shade taking into the sunlight or vice versa, that's where the pure view seems to do really well. The low light conditions, yes, it is better. How much better than the N8? Maybe less noticeable. It is better. And of course, it's a lot better than your standard camera phone as well.
Yeah, I just say in my conclusions in this part 2C, and this is probably quite controversial, and I think Nokia will possibly be rather shocked to say that in actual fact, if you've got an N8 right now, it's not worth upgrading to the 808 probably just for the camera. Yes, it's more flexible, and yes, it's better in most circumstances, but it's not a complete generation better. But if you take the fact that it is better and then add in the far, far better screen, the fact that you can remove the battery, it's got the video light stroke torch in addition to the Xenon. It's got this double strength Xenon. You add all these factors up, you do, and of course the 1.3 gigahertz processor, the double the RAM, it just goes on and on and on. It is very, very much an N8 upgrade there, I think.
And I think the other thing it's worth saying about the 808, you know, you're probably right, in pure camera characteristic terms, you know, much of the time you won't notice a big difference. As I say, the exception here, if you're printing out, you know, big scales, A3 and above. But I will say that the camera UI itself, as well as the kind of the design of the camera module, is considerably superior. And so what that means is when you actually come to taking photos, the actual kind of user experience of doing so is easier, which would suggest to me that you'll end up taking more photos on the 808. And it's particularly, you know, things like being able to go straight to the camera from, you know, instead of going through the unlock process and all of that. I mean, there are third-party workarounds in theory for the N8, but it's so much better integrated on the N8. And in particular, we've mentioned this again and again on the podcast, the three different modes, kind of basic, so scene mode and then custom mode. And that custom mode in particular, if you're looking to sort of, you know, play about with the capability of the camera, maybe do something like HDR shots, for example, having that all built into the camera application rather than having to use a third-party application, I think does make a big difference. You know, maybe if you want to do some photos over time, you know, taking a sequence once a minute over 24 hours, that kind of time lag type creation, again, it's much easier on the 808. So for me, actually, the reason to upgrade the 808 is some of the things that Steve was talking about, being a better smartphone. But I would say the better camera experience is as much about the software on board as it is with improved optics and the bigger sensor, which is there, but only comes into a play in certain situations.
Yeah. I did say originally when I first got the 808, it's basically hard to take a bad photo on the 808 PureView. Now, we haven't actually sent it up to Edinburgh to Ewan to try this hypothesis out. But in theory, across all light conditions, if you just do a chart, perhaps, in your mind, visualizing this as you listen to this podcast, do a chart of all the different light conditions from incredibly sunny, like Texas sun, right through to pitch dark, nighttime in the middle of, I don't know, Antarctica or somewhere, and then across that chart, then look at the number of acceptable photos you'll get from different qualities of phone camera out there, and you'll find that the 808 actually produces something that's usable over almost all of that. Now, on the N8, you go out in most light conditions and think, well, okay, that's going to come out okay, that's going to be brilliant, that's not going to be so good, but I've got a fighting chance. But the 808, with the PureView oversampling, means that the low noise, even in low light conditions, and with the double strength Xenon and the fact it's got the neutral density filter for high light conditions, it basically, whatever you throw at it, it can produce a usable, if not brilliant, photo. And that's why it's just so flexible, why it's such a pleasure taking it out to take snaps.
So, Steve, I guess the question is, we've been talking about the camera phone stuff so far. What about using it as an actual smartphone? I mean, have there been any showstoppers that you've come across so far with the device? I mean, you mentioned that you thought last week or in the last podcast that software was a bit unstable, but you had been pushing it and using the device a lot. Is there anything else you've come across?
Before I answer that, I just want to give David a heads up. But maybe David's got some questions along these very lines. But while he has a think, I have to say I haven't come across a single showstopper. I've loaded on all my standard applications from the Nokia store. Every single one of them runs. I only had to rebuy one of them, and I think that's because I'd downloaded it so many times into so many different devices. I think I'd exceeded Nokia's counter. So absolutely no problems there whatsoever. The device only crashed on me once, I think, or maybe twice in 2 weeks. And that's, that was mainly in the first couple of days while systems and services were still being set up in the background, I think. The camera itself, stability, is still an issue in that once in a while, especially in the creative mode, it just breaches a black photo, and obviously something's gone wrong in the image processor, and you can fix it each time just by switching modes, and something gets reset internally, and then you're good to go again. And that's a kind of tiny bit annoying, because it means having taken a photo, you've just got to keep a look at the animated transition as the photo you've taken gets spun off into the corner of the screen, just to check it's not a black photo. But it's only happened, I would say, about 10% of the time, at most. And I'm sure that Nokia and Damien Dinning, his team, are right on this bug, and I'm sure they're going to release a patch that will fix this instability. Other than that, as a general smartphone, it's basically like using the Nokia 701. I have to say, it's roughly the same speed, same RAM, same application set, same usual Symbian quirks, the Nokia social networking, despite the 1.3 gigahertz processor is as fairly slow and clunky as ever. The web browser, I thought, would be blindingly fast, given the processor. It doesn't actually seem that much faster than on the N8 with the processor that's half the speed, so that's disappointing. Any comments on that, Rafe, before David comes in?
Well, with the browser, it's always a difficult one to tell, because, of course, there are quite a number of factors that go into, you know, what the performance. It's not just about the speed of the processor. It's also about the website you're looking at in terms of what's on it. And, of course, the connection speed and the quality of that connection. I'll say I did think it was a little faster when I was doing testing between the 701, which has that similar fast processor, and the original Symbian 3 devices. But it's probably fair to say it wasn't in line with the increase in the clock speed of the processor. It's maybe a 25% difference rather than the sort of factor of two that you might be expecting, looking at the kind of the processor, the RAM, and some of the other improvements made, which, yes, is a shame. And I think the story here is that the, you know, Symbian web browsing experience is, you know, still behind that of Android and iPhone. If you're looking at maybe middle of the road devices, I think that difference is less. So something like the 701, when you're comparing that with, you know, mid-tier Android devices. But of course, at this high end, with what you're paying for the 808, you might be expecting a bit more performance. I think that the tip to get around that is, if you're going to be doing a lot of web browsing, make sure you install Opera Mobile and or Opera Mini, and use those for sort of prolonged web browsing sessions. I mean, you know, if you're just dipping in and out, maybe doing a quick search, you know, you're not going to come across any major problems. You know, I've seen some commentary on some really big sites that, you know, it doesn't work. I mean, this is also a problem that you kind of get everywhere on mobile devices. There's still too many websites that, you know, don't provide a mobile version, or don't think about mobile devices, you know, when they're doing a generic version, if you will. And, you know, there's this question about how much should mobile devices be expected to be able to, you know, perform on, if you like, the desktop web versus the mobile web. And the reality is, I think, for any person designing a website, you should at this point in time be considering mobile devices as well. I mean, that's not an excuse, and the 808 web browser should be better, but I think that's part and parcel of the, you know, purchase decision. It's one of those things, if you're buying a Symbian device, you probably will be aware that the mobile web experience won't be the best that you can get on a smartphone.
Yeah. David, do you have some questions for me then?
Yes, well, the first thing I wanted to ask, I think both you and Rafe have covered, is about does the CPU and RAM make Symbian a much better user experience? But I think you've summed it up there by saying it is notably faster, but not maybe as much as you would think.
Yeah.
Steve, I'll come to you I have two more questions, and I'll come to you with this one, Steve. Having used it for so long, do you think, given that it's going to be unlocked and you can't get it subsidized, do you think it's expensive for what it is?
How much is it? Anyone know the price? I know that I'd give you the price from Amazon UK, but Amazon UK have withdrawn it, Rafe, which is another...
Yes, we should probably just comment. I have been in touch with Nokia UK about that, and Amazon UK is the way it's going to be distributed in the UK, and you can expect it to reappear on the Amazon website in relatively short order. I don't have a precise timeline on that, but it will be coming back. I think the pricing is going to be sort of between £450 and £500. I guess I should give my quick answer before Steve comes back in. Yes, I do feel it's expensive for what it is. But that rather depends on what you view it as. If you're looking at it as the best camera phone you can buy, you go, well, that's what you have to pay for a top-end mobile device. When you look at it in a more generic sense, I think a lot of people are going to find that quite expensive, to buy if it's not going to be their primary device, which I can imagine for a lot of people, they're looking at this and going, I'd really love to own that camera technology, but there's some other factors, you know, that I'd like to be asked to have. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable viewpoint. So, yes, it's certainly at the upper end of the price boundary that I think a lot of people are going to be comfortable with. You know, for sake of argument, if it was at £300, of course it's going to sell more. But I think also a lot more people would go, yes, I'm willing to pick one of those up, you know, kind of as a second device. But it, you know, comes back to the fact that you can't get this camera technology anywhere else. It really is quite unique in that sense. And so the 808, you know, often when you're talking about pricing, it's comparing it with another device in the same price category. Well, I don't think there is any other device quite like the 808. And so in that sense, you know, of course, people will be willing to pay top dollar for it.
Yeah, I think if it is your only device, you're planning to make this Symbian's last hurrah, the classic Symbian smartphone, take it to its ultimate nth degree before Symbian twaddles off into the sunset. And I think the actual price is fairly irrelevant. I mean, it'll be £400, £450-ish. That's what any top smartphone of 2012 costs when it's unsubsidized. That's the standard price. I remember back in the day, Rafe, back in the mid-1990s, I was paying £500 for the latest Science Series 5. Again, the price doesn't seem to have gone down much over the years, even though inflation has meant that £500 is actually worth quite a bit less. So I don't balk at a £500 a price point, David, if it's going to be my only device. As Rafe said, if it's just a toy you want to own an 808 before it disappears, then yes, that's a lot. But for something I'm going to use every single day, 40, 50, 60 times a day for the next 2 years, then it's not a big price at all.
Okay. The other point I wanted to bring up is that this may be the last Symbian phone. And obviously, knocking around, pushing it with carriers, it is only going to be available as an unlocked device. So, and I'll ask Rafe to answer this first. Do we think this is going to be another N9? It's an interesting device with unique features, but it's ultimately going to be a dead end.
Well, to answer that question, first of all, we should probably make it clear that it is being ranged by some operators in some markets. It's just in the UK that it's only available SIM-free, and something similar is happening in the US. Actually, pretty much the same happened with the N9, except I would say the N9 was even less available than the 808 is. I mean, the 808 is going to be available sort of somewhat officially SIM-free in pretty much every market. That wasn't really true of the N9. So immediately, you know, there is a difference there. And actually, I would say it's not all that different to Nokia's other, you know, really big camera phones from the past. The N8 was, in one sense, something of an exception. It was kind of a crossover device. Yes, it was all about the camera, but it actually got quite broadly ranged. And I think that was because in the context of the Nokia portfolio at the time, in terms of smartphones, it was seen as a really great device. If you look back at something like, say, the N86 or the N82, they were both camera-centric devices, but they didn't really get broad uptake from operators. They were considered kind of niche devices, and I think the 808 kind of falls into that category too. I mean, for example, with the case of the N82, there was the N95 around as well. Admittedly, there isn't quite that same equivalent now, but you know, given that Symbian is being end of life, you know, it's not a dissimilar situation. So to kind of answer your question, I think the 808 was always going to be a relatively niche device. You know, that's what happens when you kind of overemphasize one element of a smartphone over all others. In this case, it's the camera. You know, sometimes it can be something else. It's relatively unusual for a device that has, you know, one characteristic stronger than the others to enjoy really massive sales. You know, the ones that do best do tend to be a jack of all trades. I think you can look at other manufacturers and you'll see, you know, a very similar pattern there. You know, Sony Ericsson maybe with their, you know, PlayStation phone is a good example of that. Even Samsung with the Galaxy Tab, you know, that has enjoyed a lot of success, but relative to the Galaxy main series, you know, the 2 and 3 hasn't sold in quite the same numbers. So I'd expect something similar with the 808, but of course all of that, you know, sales chatter around the 808 does have to be set in the context of it being, you know, kind of the last of a line of devices. The difference with the N9 is the N9 truly was unique. It was just one of a kind. The 808's kind of sitting at the end of a series. So for me, it is a little different.
I think, as we said in the conversation before about you maybe shouldn't get it if you do just want the best for the sake of it. But I think I probably will get one, because one thing I like about this is that it's using a micro SIM, and I've had to cut my SIM down to micro SIM to use the Windows Phone devices. So I think I will probably hold out and see how cheap they get on eBay, because the thing is, I do want a really good, the best I can get connected camera for taking review photographs. And that's why I wanted an N8 all that time ago, and that did become my main device as well. So it'll be interesting to see how I feel about one when I get my hands on one.
Yeah, I think what I would say to that, as we've said before, you know, this isn't going to be a unique piece of camera technology that Nokia is suddenly going to abandon. It is going to get used on future devices, and it doesn't take a genius to work out that that's going to be Windows Phone. Nokia have more or less said that. A couple of executives have pretty much come out and said, yes, it will be on Lumia devices. We've said that we don't expect it to be quite the same quality on the first time round, but, you know, give it a bit of time. Nokia clearly going to use imaging as one of their differentiators in their devices. And so I think that will, you know, create not a problem for the 808, but it probably gives it a window in which to sell to enthusiasts, where it will be the best camera phone. And I expect that to last for a while, because, as I said, the first ones probably won't measure up in specs. But, you know, in a year or two's time, maybe 18 months, there will be another, you know, great camera phone device from Nokia. So, you know, it's interesting. This is the last of the Symbian device, and I can see perfect justification saying I want to have a Symbian device for the next 2 years, so this is the one to get. For those looking for the best camera phone, it's maybe a bit more problematic, unless you're solely focused on the camera phone, in which case, get the 808. But, you know, some people might want to bear in mind there's probably more to come in this sort of pure view range down the line, both this year and next year.
Yeah, there's a bit of good news for you, David. Actually, if you do get the 808, unlike some other devices which use micro SIMs in a kind of a caddy that you pop in, like on the Lumia 800, for example, in the 808, we're back to a glory be a little SIM tray that you just fold a little metal clamp down over. In other words, there's no possibility for any kind of foul up with SIM cards and contacts, so you'll be overjoyed with that. I just want to give three other things, or four other things, that really impressed me before we round up the 808 for this particular podcast. Number one, the screen is glorious. I mean, we had the E7 screen, right? This has basically got the same display. But on the E7, it shone, but the rest of the device rather let it down in some ways. Here, we've got the best of all worlds in terms of specifications and flexibility and gadgets and camera with that glorious screen. And it just stands out. Every time I look at the screen, it probably best most of the Android phones I've seen, even the top-end ones. I know they're higher resolution, but the contrast and the clarity on the E7 and 808 screens is just stunning. Would you agree?
Yes. I mean, I haven't been able to use one for as long as you have, but it does feel to me like many of the things that we've seen in the Symbian 3 devices are kind of all the best bits have been combined together in the 808. And so in that sense, you know, anyone who wants the ultimate Symbian device, assuming they can stomach the camera hump, and it's really not as bad as some people make out. I mean, you know, yes, it's noticeable, but they've done the best job I think they could to minimize it. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, if you want a Symbian device and want it to last for the next 2 years because you're maybe not ready to decide to move to another platform, or, you know, you're fond of the Symbian UI, the 808 is absolutely the device to get.
Yeah, and it's very well weighted. I mean, obviously it's weighted down the camera end, but the feel in the hand really is very good. They've got this wonderful matte plastic finish that makes it very grippy. When you hold it in hand as a phone, your forefinger rests beautifully underneath the rounded camera hump and makes it almost undroppable, which is a real design feature. Maybe yeah. Every phone should have a hump.
Yeah, I mean, what's probably worth saying here is that the 808 has the same attention to detail on the design of the body and the choice of materials that, you know, all the other, especially the high-end Nokia devices have. And that's always, I think, been a hallmark of Nokia design, and does make them stand out a bit from their competition. You know, the idea of everything else being black slabs is overused, I think, you know, because there's some great design. You know, HTC and Samsung, you know, have both done good work there. But I think Nokia still does stand out. It's not just the way it looks. It's actually the feel of it in the hand, that kind of the ergonomics of it. And the 808 is really good, for, as far as I'm concerned, in that particular department. And so kind of the comfort of long-term usage, and that extends to things like the camera capture key. You know, it's the best one they've ever produced. You know, the slider lock key is actually a slider, you know, which is easy to use one-handed, and easy to find rather than sort of a button sitting on the top of the device. So all of those factors combine to create a device that has, you know, a design, if you ignore all the hardware side of it and, you know, the software side of it, that really is very compelling indeed.
Yeah. The next thing I want to mention is the speaker. Now, I was a big fan of the N8 speaker. I do a lot of podcast listening and internet radio listening around the house and BBC iPlayer and so forth. But lots of media consumption audibly, actually, within the room. And the N8 speaker was always the champion. This has got exactly the same component, but with a tiny bit more space behind it. I think it's louder than the N8. I have to say, I don't often say this for many phones, but when I'm listening to podcasts around the house, I have to turn the volume down on the 808, because most phones, you're up to maximum and you're straining to hear it over the dishwasher or whatever. Here, I actually think, no, that's too loud, that's hurting my ears. I have to turn the volume down to bring it to the right volume level, which is really quite impressive. So real big thumbs up there for the 808 speaker. Also, one final thing I want to mention was that Mail for Exchange, my big bugbear over the last few generations of Symbian devices, whether it's the 808 firmware that's made the difference, whether it's the inclusion of the Microsoft apps, which I know Rafe includes some extensions to the built-in Mail client, whether that's made the difference, but all of a sudden Mail for Exchange has with Google has started working for me. So I've now got full Mail for Exchange contacts, calendar, email sync from my 808 through to Google and all the Google services, and back down to my Android smartphones as well. It's a real end-to-end experience and kept in perfect sync. So I'm a really, really happy bunny here. David?
With you just saying about Mail for Exchange, just interested in the enterprise credentials of this one. Have you checked if the version of QuickOffice that's built into this device, if it is there, does that support SkyDrive and Google Drive and Dropbox?
I'm checking live in the podcast.
I can tell you that it doesn't. It's the previous version, which is the one that Nokia licensed. There is, in fact, an update that David is referring to that kind of builds in cloud integration, but that's not licensed by Nokia for inclusion in its devices. There are various, obviously, third-party workarounds, and the Microsoft apps has support for getting onto the corporate equivalent of SkyDrive, which...
SharePoint.
Thank you, Steve, because the name had just escaped me for a moment there. But yes, that's kind of a shame, because actually I think QuickOffice in terms of consumer cloud was probably a better option. There are some other third-party cloud software for remote storage, which I think we're going to mention in the podcast in a moment. So perhaps I should hand that as a slinky link to David to talk about Davi.
Yeah, go for it now, David. What is Davi, and what's this other weird acronym that goes along with this other service?
The other service you're referring to is Atixo, which I'll come to in a moment. Davi is actually a web dev client for Symbian devices. If you were using a Symbian device a few years ago, you wouldn't have needed this, because web dev was built into the operating system. Although, as of Nokia Bell, it was removed. So if you relied on WebDAV connectivity, Davi is the application you need. And I actually really liked it. I mean, I gave it a relatively low score because I was reviewing it along with Atixo and there was a couple of features missing from it that I wanted. But in general, it's got a really great UI, so much so is that I wish you could have actually been able to browse local files on it, because I would have used it to replace the built-in file manager. It was that good. It was actually it's built for selecting multiple files from the get-go. You don't need to say, right, I'm going to mark files now, or I have to long press to select a bunch of files. And you can act on a directory just as easily as you can act on individual files for initiating transfers.
And this will work with any WebDAV service, will it?
Yes, it will, because WebDAV is a standard, so you can just put in the credentials. And also, because of the sensitive nature of files that you could be accessing for it, is another nice feature that I liked about it, was that you could actually set up a master password that it will challenge you for every time you go into the application. Well, every time you load the application, yeah. That is. So that was very handy. And what goes along with that nicely, which is why I made it a double-barreled review, is this third-party service called Atixo, which brings together all the popular cloud storage services for us, for example, Dropbox, SugarSync, Google Drive, SkyDrive, and even FTP servers. It brings them all together and presents them as a single web dev share. And it's free to use as long as you transfer less than 2 gigabytes of files per month. So I set up an account on Atixo, associated all my accounts with it, and just put my account details for that into Davi. And they work together really nicely. Atixo did have some problems for two of the services, and I believe it was Dropbox and SugarSync, but I might be wrong, so read the review. It would only let you browse 3 directory levels deep, and I did have some connectivity issues with that, but I verified it by, well, I double-checked things by setting it up as an account on my Windows computer as well, and I was getting the same errors there, so it wasn't Davi's fault. So, yeah, they have some bugs to iron out, but it's a very interesting service if you're a Symbian Power user and you really need to get at remote files. And actually, I did an article a while ago talking about cloud storage on Symbian, and up to that point, if you were using multiple cloud storage services, you would have to have an app for each individual service. But once all the bugs are ironed out of Atixo and Davi, that's a point I'll come back to. If you use that, Davi can replace everything because you can attach your accounts to Atixo and just browse them all and access them all in Davi, which is really great. The only thing that Davi was missing that I would have liked, but something which is Qtbox has for Dropbox, is that if you wanted to upload images, you only had file names to go on, but there wasn't a thumbnail gallery, which makes it a lot easier for selecting the images you want. So that's it, and I think it's only a pound in the Nokia store.
So Davi's a pound, but Atixo is free for the first 2 gigabytes bandwidth per month. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's actually £3, but I still think it's great value for getting all the apps or all the kind of services you need into one place. And just to comment very quickly on WebDev, as David mentioned, that was something that was earlier in the platform. In fact, it's always been in the operating system. It still is, even in Nokia Bell. But what they removed was the application that allowed you to access it. It's not dissimilar to what happened with the UPnP or the DLNA functionality. All the kind of underlying APIs were there in the platform, but it needed an application to take advantage of them. It's kind of a legacy of Symbian being quite mature, that there's often the things enabling stuff sitting there, but not necessarily the app to take advantage of them. So I was kind of pleased to see this emerge because WebDev obviously is something that's quite widely used both in the corporate environment and, as David was mentioning here, Atixo is kind of a trick to get all your cloud storage in it. But for those who, you know, want WebDev back on their Symbian device, Davi is an ideal solution. And, you know, using all the kind of Bell UI look and feel in terms of its acute quick components and all of that, it's been nicely implemented. I've downloaded this and used it myself. Because I don't have 3-level deep directories on the services, I didn't come across the problem. You know, you can also, you know, have certain amounts of support for encryption and things like that. So yes, it's a very good solution and a good example of how a third party developer is, you know, continuing to support the Symbian platform. So thumbs up from me as well.
Yeah. And just to respond to a comment that I got on that review, is that SkyDrive does have its own web dev access, although it's not presented in a user-friendly way. So, for example, if you want to use that, you have to use a very, very long, painful URL. So Atixo makes it a lot easier to set up SkyDrive on your Symbian device as well through Davi.
Yeah, but it's handy that you can get access to SkyDrive and all the other cloud storage services, particularly if you're thinking about transferring between platforms or indeed use multiple different platforms, as I think most of us do. It's quite convenient to have, you know, one central cloud storage place. And for me, I basically switched to SkyDrive from Dropbox, mainly thanks to the level of integration with Windows Phone. And I've been using this to kind of upload the odd photo and file from my Symbian device, and it's proved very handy for that purpose.
I tried to switch over to SkyDrive, but I found that the desktop sync client on Windows couldn't keep up with the amount of files I was trying to put through it. It was constantly processing changes. But what I do now, I have something of a crazy setup. I have Dropbox as my root cloud share. And inside Dropbox, I have my SkyDrive folder. And inside my SkyDrive folder, I have my Google Drive folder.
You crazy hacker, you. let's finish with one story very quickly. The Microsoft App Suite we mentioned about 10 minutes ago, that's Office Mobile, Link 2010, PowerPoint Broadcast, and OneNote, has now been released for the E6, which should please Rafe, because he's a big E6 fan. You'll lose about 50 megabytes in your C disk, but that shouldn't be a problem, Rafe, on the E6. So they basically, Microsoft and Nokia working between them have customized a Microsoft app suite with a VGA display on the E6. And I'm presuming they've also done something about the font so that the fonts are at a readable size. I don't suppose you've installed this?
I haven't got around to installing it yet, but I certainly will be doing so. I mean, the E6 is obviously one of the enterprise-focused devices, but with that strange screen resolution, or rather that unique screen resolution, I'd say it's not surprising it's taken a little bit longer. It's a shame it didn't happen a little bit quicker, but it's good to hear that it's finally arrived.
Yeah, so you get the same UI tweaks, well, to the built-in Nokia email client, which I still claim I would install the MS App Suite just for that, because it certainly seems to make things go much more smoothly, and you get a few extra icons in the toolbar. The existing QuickOffice software on your E6, by the way, will stay there, and it shouldn't be affected, though you will find that all the default assignments get rejigged, so when you get emailed an Office document, it will now open up in the Microsoft Office Mobile, which I suppose is fair enough. And it's the way things are going. Now, the QuickOffice have been bought out by Google, Rafe, which I guess might mean the kind of winding down of their Symbian support.
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, we mentioned this a few weeks ago in the podcast. I don't think it's going to have any major impact because, really, this was something that Nokia licensed. Certainly, there won't be any more development for Symbian, but I don't think there was going to be anyway. So I imagine there'll be enough support resources devoted to keep the remaining Symbian users happy, but all in all, there's not a lot that will go wrong with this. It'll either work or won't work on some files, but if you're using the standard stuff, you should be happy. I doubt there's new users coming in to kind of find problems in the same way there might have been a few years ago.
Yeah, I guess it's a measure to finish off the podcast how excited I am playing with the 808 Pure View and this last great Symbian device that I've been sad listening to us chatting over the last 15 minutes that we're not talking about the 808 anymore. It's sitting there and I'm caressing it. I think, why aren't we talking about the 808 still? Which is really sad.
Well, I think we have to remember that some people don't have an 808. In fact, most of us, and some people are, and many people aren't planning to buy it. And the vast majority of Symbian devices out there aren't 808s. And so I think it's only fair that we cover things that may be of interest to them. So hopefully the Davi and the web dev portion of the podcast will keep everybody in that camp happy. But, you know, please do send in some feedback if there's any questions or coverage you'd like us to do on the 808, or indeed you think we're doing too much of it and there's something else you'd like us to cover or a topic you'd like to chat about in the podcast, please let us know. You can send feedback in via the comment feed associated with this podcast. You can email me, rafe@allaboutsymbian.com, or get in touch via Twitter at AAS.
Yes, and talking about feedback and contacting us, if you've been affected by Steve's story in this podcast, you can contact us for counselling as well.
When I went to the, I had a little mini phone show chat pub meet last week, guys, and I took the 808 along, and blow me down, one of the other three guys who turned up for my very impromptu last-minute meet also had an 808. That was James Honeyball, a friend of the site, and he'd ordered this from Amazon Germany, and quite a few people are going down that route. So if you're impatient with Amazon UK, you can get them from Amazon Germany, and there should be no issues at all. And certainly I think James has been quite pleased with his. In fact, he had the white 808, so we had a white and black one sitting next to each other on a table in Sonning in Berkshire when there were virtually no others in the entire country, which was rather unusual. But hey. Yeah. We've had a tweet in, Rafe, in light of what you just said. People have said they wanted to talk about the Nokia 3650 a bit more, so sorry.
Nokia 3650, I remember that with great fondness. It looked like it had been sat on a great rotary dial. Shame it never caught on.
People talk about thickness of phones, Rafe. I picked up a Nokia N95 8GB the other day. An absolute classic smartphone from its day. I think it was about early 2008 when that was released. Classic device. But it seems so thick. And people now talk about the 808 with a big camera hub. I mean, they say massive. It's monstrous. It's huge. It's 14 millimetres. 14 millimetres is still a lot thinner than the entire N95 8GB, and that was considered a classic phone only 5 years ago. So I think times do change. I think people shouldn't dismiss devices like this just because they're, quote, 1.4 centimetres thick. Wow, shock horror.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, a symptom of the changing times. I mean, one of the things that touch has done is basically lead to thinner phones because there's been less of a necessity for something like a keypad, which did tend to mean you get thicker devices, and particularly on something like the N95, which was of course kind of a slider device. But yes, I mean, part of me kind of goes, I would rather see some of the thinness, sacrificed for other elements. And we've talked about being bigger batteries, but it's not just that. It's, sometimes the feel of a device in the hand, because a lot of the time, I would say anything up to about 15 to 16 millimeters, it's absolutely fine when you're putting it in the pocket. The only time it really has an impact is when you're, wearing maybe tight jeans or something like that, in which case anything as a device isn't particularly comfortable. Sometimes this race for the smaller device, we had it back, people remember, in the kind of late 90s with devices like the Ericsson T68i, where, making it as small as possible was deemed to be a good thing. That obviously had an impact on screen size and button size. We're not getting that now because there's this trend to have really big screens, but really thin devices, just every now and then I think, I wish people would try something different. I mean, that's why I think, companies like Apple and Nokia as well, with their design, they've actually made their, touchscreen phones stand out from the competition. And that's one of the reasons I think they've been successful. It just looks different on the shop shelf. And it'll be interesting to see what Nokia does with its kind of next range of devices, because that so-called Fabula design language that debuted with the N9, then got used in the Lumia 800 range, that's going to be a hard act to follow, but they need to do something similar just to, so people can go, ah, yes, that's a Nokia device. There's still the idea that you put a device down on the table, you should be able to tell within a second or on that first glance who's made it. And I do think that factor is kind of important and sometimes underestimated when people, solely focus on the entire, either specifications or what it does. There's still a, an X factor that, makes people like or dislike a phone.
Yeah. When I pick a phone up, this is just me wibbling on at the end of the podcast, but I like to curl my fingers round the side of the phone. If the phone's razor thin, like 7 or 8 millimeters, it's actually quite uncomfortable. And then when I try and juggle the phone from hand to hand, it's incredibly droppable. I actually prefer phones to be a centimeter to a centimeter and a half thick. Things like the Nokia X6, for example, the Nokia 5800, they were just the perfect size for a phone. They were almost undroppable because they always gripped your hand because they were always the right size. My Galaxy Nexus, which I like it as an Android phone, it's got some real high points, and yet it's so incredibly fragile, and so I have to almost treat it with kid gloves all the time, unlike my Nokias.
Yeah, I think it's as much down to the material choice sometimes as the actual thickness. I agree, once you start going under kind of the 10 millimeter barrier, then you it does become a problem. But often, a lot of the time, it's just the choice of material, particularly on the back. And so the kind of the ceramic finishes or the slightly rougher finishes can often be a lot better than the shiny finishes, quite apart from the fingerprint and the dirt issues. And actually, I think that's one of the areas where we're going to continue to see quite a bit of development and how manufacturers differentiate their devices. Because after all, there's not a lot you can do. When you've got a big screen on the front of the device, there's a limit to what you can do. But what you do on the back, particularly with the finish, and it's a dual thing. There's a practical thing, there's a cosmetic thing, and of course a durability thing. So those factors have to combine together. And sometimes I think the manufacturers will go too far one way or the other, and then there is of course a tendency for people to put cases on their phone and often spoil all the effort that's gone into that. I mean, talking about the Lumia devices, for example, putting a case on them is not it's a good thing to do in keeping your phone in good condition, but actually you can drop a Lumia 800, and because it's the integral color plastic, you can actually almost have them self-heal. You won't notice scratches so much. I wouldn't promote it quite as much as Nokia have done. I mean, you can still have a noticeable scratch on the back of the device, but I do think that is the kind of right approach. The combination of durable material, something that feels quite comfortable and actually looks good as well, and particularly the color range that you have there, I think has been one of the highlights of the kind of Fabula design language.
Just in the interest of more wibbling, I think there does have to be a variety of designs, not just for distinctiveness, but for actual comfort and ease of use, because everyone has got different size hands, and it would be nice to live in a world where we could have a given model of phone, and it would be like clothes. You could buy it in small, medium, and large. Nokia have almost done that with the Lumia 800 and 900, I think. But I think my theory, and this does come down to the shape and the materials. If you can comfortably close your thumb and forefinger around the phone, it's the right size for you. And there, the sharp corners comes into that, because then if you found out the Connors are digging in, they'll probably do that while you're trying to hold it and write a text with one hand as well.
Yeah, I'm just trying that with my Galaxy Nexus, and I can just about get my thumb and middle finger to touch around the front of it. So I guess that's borderline for me, but certainly it's very easy on the 808. And my comment on the 3650, guys, that was supposed to be a parting witty comment before we said goodbye, and that was 15 minutes ago. Thank you for the interesting discussion, as ever. A cheery goodbye from Mr. David Gilson.
Goodbye, everybody, and we'll talk to you in the next podcast.
And we're glad you're back online, Mr. Ray Blanford.
Goodbye, everybody, and thank you for listening.
And you can catch us on Twitter at AAS, also All About Symbian on Facebook, allaboutsymbian.com. Thank you very much for listening. Catch you next week.